Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Good. And I have a couple little things we want to talk about today. Actually, what I'd like to discuss a little bit is this disappearance of this journalist in Saudi Arabia, a famous name anyway, Khashoggi.
Yeah.
And nobody knows where he went and what it means. And it may be a real significant event. And there's a lot of speculation, so we don't have the answers on that, but we'll, talk a little bit about that. But before we do that, I wanted to mention just briefly about the resignation, the coming resignation for Nikki Haley.
Yeah.
And I don't know, is that good news? We're going to lose a very good neocon, and she's leaving the organization. So I'm interested in the appointment, the new appointment, because my suspicion is it'll be another neocon. But who knows? Maybe we'll get somebody there that's a little bit balanced. I don't think it'll be Graham. He says, Lindsey Graham said he doesn't want a job in the administration. But, that sort of came up. It looks like it's being handled a little more smoothly than some resignation. A lot of rumors going on and conflict with her. And she comes across to me as a very bright person with all the wrong ideas on foreign policy. But it can't help but be a serious thing, a significant event. And since we're going to be talking about Saudi Arabia and the Middle East and what that means on this disappearance, in a way, she's been in the middle of that. Maybe she's getting out of town before we can ask her what's going on over there.
Yeah, and this happened just as we were preparing for the show. I mean, this announcement was made. So it's difficult to know what the significance of the whole resignation is. But I do know, and I think you'll probably agree, Dr. Paul, people don't just leave because they need to spend time with the family. It's, supposedly she raised the issue last week to President Trump, and it was kept under wraps until today. It's very funny that it comes all of a sudden. But, Nikki Haley, it was a surprise when President Trump named her to be U.S. ambassador to the U.N. because she was firmly in the Never Trump camp. He even tweeted, I think, during the primaries that she's really a dumb person, So it made you wonder why he picked her in the first place. But she spent the entire time, she's actually been there from the beginning, she spent the entire time getting way out ahead of the president in terms of being very bombastic, very warmongering. She contradicted the president many times. And so it really, there was some speculation that maybe she's quitting now so she could run against him. But she said, no, I don't have any ambitions in that area. But it really is a big question mark. Unfortunately, for once, sir, we don't have the answers, but it really is an important event.
Well, and it really raises the questions, her attitude. I wonder if it could influence Trump and maybe, help push this along, which would be good because we don't like her politics. And there's no reason why somebody who's been hired by a president, they should be always challenging him in public. It is true. She was pretty strong And even though he is strong, yesterday we talked about maybe he's not really as strong as he talks and that he'd like to back off a little bit. But the question always comes down to why are the appointments made? And that is the reason why we will watch carefully to find out what kind of names are thrown out there to replace her.
I think I think that is key, really. That will indicate what the real reasoning was behind it. Because if it is going to be a Tom Cotton or another one like that, then we know it was nothing. There's a little airplane scandal that's sort of percolating, but if he really takes a change of direction and does, I don't know if you have your phone on silence, maybe you might get a call during the show, but if that happens, then we'll know there's a real shift.
Yeah, well, it's sort of sad in a way that this is an issue. I mean, we shouldn't even be in the United Nations. They don't serve our interests. And Trump has expressed himself not to get out of the UN, but he's expressed his reluctance to fully endorse all these international groups. So, but this is a big deal, and it's been that way. I can remember when the UN was started, and I can remember a teacher, I was probably in about the eighth grade, coming in and announcing this and why it was a great thing, and we would have peace forever, and this would be so different than you know, the League of Nations. So, but in a free society, and if we were a more libertarian country and a constitutional country, we wouldn't be involved in this. I don't think the founders anticipated and gave explicit authority for us to enter these multilateral agreements and commit our forces and defenses to all these countries.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as a talking group of sovereign nations, there's probably a role for it, but that's not it.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about Khashoggi. Jamal Khashoggi all of a sudden disappeared. And the name is a famous name, but he's an individual that's been around, and he actually dealt with Bin Laden. His cousin was much more famous in the arms business, Adnan Khashoggi, and he was involved in the Iran-Contra scandal when we secretly delivered weapons to Iran to get the hostages back. So that family's been involved there. But now he's been writing things that it's said to be critical of Saudi Arabia, and therefore he sort of stays out of Saudi Arabia, but he went back to do some business at the embassy in Turkey, and they disappeared. He disappeared. They disappeared him. But that's not been confirmed. Right now, most people are assuming that that he's probably been murdered, by somebody in the administration, which now the anticipation is this will be a big deal. This raises questions about, our close association with Saudi Arabia and what's going on with these wars and oil and a lot of things that our foreign policy might have to change, and people are even suggesting, this is getting so complex that this might have significance. But it's also a challenge to our neocons, because if Khashoggi was murdered by the Saudi administration, that means we have to question, our close alliance, with Saudi Arabia and our support for the Yemen war. So this is something that we may get the answers, but it's another one that, if they did their job right, we never visualized the body of Bin Laden. Yeah. So I don't know about whether this ever be proof. But I think even if there's not that physical proof, I think most people, well, if they haven't seen him for a month, most people know what happened. I think he sent out a message, shortly before this happened, a warning to his family, which they interpreted that he could be in serious trouble.
Yeah, and he was actually a week ago Tuesday, he went into the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, and I think what he was doing is finalizing his divorce papers, and he never came out. And the story goes that 15 Saudis came into the embassy and a bunch of cars left. And of course, there's a lot of speculation as to, I mean, some of it's pretty outlandish that he was cut up into pieces and put in these cars. So I wonder, but I had a lot of red flags going up watching this unfold yesterday, because I saw neocon after neocon lining up to castigate the Saudis. And normally they would be, definitely on the side of the Saudis. When you see, some of the people in the Washington Post and New York Times and elsewhere lionizing this fellow, well, they make him out like he was some sort of, huge dissident, like he was, a great figure opposing the Saudi regime. But he really, he was critical around the edges. But when it comes to core Saudi principles, for example, he was all in favor of the Saudi war against Syria. He was all in favor of the rebels. He just wrote a piece not long ago about now is the time to break up Syria, so. And where is this? They say he became critical of the Yemen war, but there was not a lot of criticism of the war on Yemen. So I would say a critic in parentheses.
I think the most interesting thing to come of this so far has been, if the relationship between the United States and Saudi Arabia becomes, more shaky, that the the people in Iran put this overture out to Saudi Arabia and say, hey, maybe we ought to work together because now you're sort of in a squabble with the United States. Maybe we would be better off if we were allies, with dealing with the oil and maybe get pushed closer to the Russian position. So that's interesting. I was surprised to see that. It's going to be hard for me to believe that would happen because the animosity between Saudis and Iran is pretty strong.
Yeah, it seems that way. But it's interesting because if you look at the series of events over the past week or so, remember President Trump tweeted out, or he told an audience, I think he was speaking in Ohio or somewhere, you know what, these Saudis wouldn't last 2 weeks without us protecting them. They got to pay up. And it sounded like bluster. And actually, the Saudis at the time, they wrote it off as just bluster to his people. We understand. But, you know, as has been written in a couple of pieces that we read, you know, this is really considered a pretty strong insult in Saudi Arabia for them to be so disrespectful to the Saudi government, to act like they're just, you know, a bunch of peasants and pawns that need to pay up. So that was really the precipitating factor to the Iranians then making an overture to the Saudis. Hey, these Americans are bullying you just like they bully us. Why don't we get together and do something about it? It's pretty interesting, you know, if that rift were healed, how that might change the equation in the Middle East. It could do a significant change and actually for the better, because it would mean that we're no longer in the center of things and meddling everywhere. Yeah.
Well, the other relationship that'll be interesting to see how it evolves is Mohammed bin Salman getting along, you know, with Jared Kushner.
Yeah.
And Kushner... I think Haley was very complimentary of Kushner, how important he is.
Oh, yeah.
And so he may be a much more dominant figure than we hear in the daily media. But that'll be interesting to see exactly what happens there, especially at the same time that Haley is leaving. So I think that there's lots to be watched carefully. I think some claim that this is a sign of tremendous internal weakness in Saudi Arabia, but that just means that they might buckle down to be more authoritarian. You know, the argument was that they were becoming more reformed and women were going to be allowed to drive, which now some argue, and probably the case, that was just sort of a play. You know, it was time to give in. But don't go any further than driving a car. Don't treat them like individuals with equal rights, though. And all of a sudden, they've been cracked down on. If they're expecting more freedom in Saudi Arabia, the government's not going to allow it. And that means there's going to be internal turmoil there as well.
I think that has a lot to do with it. And I know this is not scientific, but as I read more and more yesterday about this, my spookometer went up through the roof because it really has a very spooky smell. And I'm being a little bit silly, but it's, first of all, Khashoggi was in exile in the U.S. for quite some time. He wrote for the Washington Post, which most people consider the mouth organ of the CIA. And there's a question as to what kind of relationship he may have had with our intelligence services while he was here. Did they approach him? Because this is a person of significance in Saudi Arabia. As you point out, came from a very wealthy family, but he was also very close to Prince Turki Al-Faisal, who ran Saudi intelligence for more than 20 years, right up until 9/11. So this is a very connected person. You're talking about the inner squabbles of the Saudi royal family. There are a lot of, as you know, Mohammed bin Salman, and we saw this in a piece we read today, the first future Saudi leader who was not educated in the U.S. There are so many bloody rival factions within the family. And when you put into the mix the CIA, Saudi intelligence, there's something going on that we don't fully understand now, I think.
Well, we've been intensely involved in Saudi Arabia, especially since World War II. And I think it was during that time that we had made the commitment to always defend them for cheap oil. But it's been rocky at times. In the 70s, there were boycotts. And, of course, when the war broke out in Iraq, the anti-war folks, you know, had a chant. It's all about oil. It's all about oil. But the pretense is that it's all about democracy and liberty and a positive revolution and giving more freedom to the individual. So they talk about that. But I don't think we can ignore there may be some personal fights going on, maybe family fights going on in Saudi Arabia. But it's still a lot about oil, you know, because they do have a lot of oil, but they have a lot of influence in the Middle East. So I think the only thing that would challenge the United States would really change things if the Saudis and the Iranians got together. But, you know, that just seems so big that I wouldn't expect that to happen. But I do think there's going to be continued fight over oil. And the Khashoggis have been involved in the sale of weapons, you know, for a long, long time. So I think weapon sales, big deal. And that's one of the things that we argue with the Saudi king is that, you know, if you buy weapons from Russia, we're not going to be very happy with you. So business, oil, carries the date. They always throw in a little bit, oh yes, this is a revolution for democracy and freedom for the people. I wished it were so, but it isn't achieved. I don't think that's what's happening right now. I don't think the factions are fighting over liberty, how much liberty we can give to the people right now. It's who's going to control the strings of power and money, sort of like what happens in the United States a lot.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's an important point that I was going to mention too, is that I don't see a turn on the part of Washington away from Saudi Arabia, because A, they spend millions of dollars a year lobbying on Capitol Hill, and that pays for a lot of very nice homes for former congressmen and who knows what. And second of all, they buy a lot of our weapons and missiles and guns and all this. So there's a lot of money from Saudi flowing into Washington. You're not going to wake up tomorrow and see all of a sudden Washington breaking ties or in any sense of the word. So I would just, if I should shut it down, just to mention that the Saudis have also kidnapped leaders before. They kidnapped Hariri, the head of Lebanon, a while ago, and gave him the once over, and he went back home and resigned afterwards. So they're not above it. I speculate that probably Khashoggi will surface at some point and end the speculation. What comes next is a big question mark, but this is a very significant and important U.S. relationship, U.S. ally, and so the turmoil is certainly something to watch, Dr. Paul.
Very good, and I think you touched on the subject of the petrodollar, and that's been around for a long time. We buy the oil, we promise that we will protect Saudi Arabia, they sell us the oil at a discount price, then they end up with a lot of dollars. And guess what we want them to do? Buy American, buy our weapons, and boost our military-industrial complex. And that deal's been going on for a long time. That is so different than, let's say, you were dealing in the marketplace. Yes, a country would become wealthier, the people that would own the oil, there'd be more wealth among the individuals that have more dollars, and they might buy some goods and services in the marketplace from us, rather than the government's controlling all this and taking all the money they make from the oil and pumping it into more weapons. Then, of course, we make sure that they cannot have their parts on their sales, so we make them and hold their feet to the fire that they can't even buy parts for their airplanes unless they come to us for that. So it's a merry-go-round, and that's why. And it depends on the strength of the dollar. And when people challenge the dollar, I haven't heard the Saudis challenging the dollar, but we've known that that did happen in Libya and Iraq, and Iran would like to challenge it. So it's an important issue. The dollar will be an important issue, and that this policy can't make it more stable. If it's if this country of Saudi Arabia and the economy of Saudi Arabia is rocky and shaky, then that will have an effect on the dollar as well. And I think we already see that it takes more dollars to buy oil right now. People were saying, well, why is the oil price going up? There's supposed to be a lot of oil out there. But I think that people who look to the future and turmoil like this will decide what oil prices will be. It certainly did that in the 1970s, and maybe we'll be moving. If this continues to deteriorate, you can expect oil prices to continue to go up. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.